Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Competitive Erotic Fan Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Today you're going to hear round one featuring Baron Vaughn, David Bory, Jesse Elias, Nato Green, and Natasha Muse reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon subjects of their choosing. This was recorded live June 6, 2013 at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco. And speaking of San Francisco, competitive erotic fanfiction will be featured in the comedy tent at the Outside Lands Fest in San Fran on August 10th. 2013, with Matt Bronger, Emily Heller, Jesse Elias, Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall, Natasha Leggero, Joe Mandy, and Dave Hill. It's going to be insane. Stay tuned after the show for more dates, or you can always follow me on Twitter, at Brian Cooking. Enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, Nato Green, David Bory, Jesse Elias, Natasha Muse, and Baron Vaughn. Yes, there it is. Let's start out with David Bory, ladies and gentlemen. David Bory! Clap your hands for David Bory.
Do I say what I did?
You don't have to. You do whatever you want.
I'm just going to do it. It was October 1994. TLC was in the studio. Working hard, putting the finishing touches on their soon-to-be classic album, Crazy Sexy Cool. One word, no commas. Today was the last day of business before the trio jet set it off to a 30-day promo tour for the upcoming album, starting in Omaha. Crunch time. The girls were in the kitchen frying up some bagel egg sandwiches, getting ready to record. Because that's how music works. Hey, Chili, put some spicy brown mustard on mine, screamed T-Boss. An exacerbated Chili replied, "Bitch, I got your spicy brown between my butt cheeks." At that moment, Lisa Left Eye Lopez yelled, "Please prove it. I say please because I ain't too proud to beg." "Yeah, come get this chocolate starfish," said Chili. T-Boss left across the room with the precision of the American goldfinch, the Iowa State bird, because she's from Des Moines, y'all. Left Eye watched the brown eye rinse down silently in the corner, wetter than the CGI liquid that filled the waterfalls video. At that moment, the door burst open and in walked Boys to Men, fresh off the success wave of their 1993 platinum album, Crispus Interpretations. "We've been on tour for 9 months, and we've come to the end of the road, and we're here to fuck," said Wanye. Without a word between them, Sean strode across the room and thrust his mic stand into Left Eye's shuddering tweeter box. Nathan removed T-Boss's mouth from Chili's beanhole and filled it with his gargantuan girth tube. Sean spun Chili around, looked directly into her eyes, and said, "I'm no scrub, but would you like to let my best friend ride?" Mark's eyes lit up in its sexy anticipation. "Sure," she said, "I'll let him get it in. And since you Motown Philly got it going on, I'll give you guys the red light special." "But don't go plugging booty holes. Please stick to the pussies and the tonsils you're used to." Then the three became one. At this exact moment, T-Boss, exhausted from the throat fuck of the century, gagged and vomited all over Nathan's Grammy Award-winning gear shaft. Wanye, now rock hard from the sheer star power of the event, began to stalk the room. A lick butt here, a tweak nipple there. He was the drum loop to this fuck fest funky bass line. I have a mother somewhere. As the room began to rock, the sound techs began to knock. Lucian Grange, a headstrong intern from the south of France, emerged in the hallway, equipped with 5 tubes of lube, 3 bottles of passion fruit Alizé, and enough rubbers to cover the splash zone at SeaWorld. I'm going in, he declared. Lucian entered the room. I can't read, y'all. And immediately got to work. He set the alizé on ice, arranged the condoms in a TLC logo, and manned the camera like a young Hype Williams. Fisheye lenses for the cum shots. Sweeping angles for the butt stuffs. A real work of art. Once the orgy hit a fever pitch, the room began to shake. Slightly at first, and then harder. And then harder. And then a pentagram-shaped portal to the funk dimension opened up on the floor next to the stack table, and out jumped Mr. Grand Parlor McFunk himself, George Clinton. He surveyed this scene and started jerking his parliamentary funk pull. Before anyone could react, he ejaculated a beam of pure energy, blinding everyone in the room. When they all came to their senses, Clinton had vanished, and young Lucian grabbed the camera. ran away screaming, "I'll own you all!" TLC hosed down and headed for Omaha. Boys to Men degreased and recorded One Sweet Day with Mariah Carey. And young Lucian Grain used the blackmail points from the fuck flick to begin a scandalous yet bold rise to power in the music industry, culminating in his appointment as CEO to Universal Records last fall. That's that.
David Borey, ladies and gentlemen, with a solid opening volley. There it is. And let's keep it going for Natasha Muse, ladies and gentlemen. Natasha Muse.
If the Fraggle Rocks are rockin', don't come a knockin'. It was Boober Fraggle's job to wash everyone's clothes on Fraggle Rock, and he loved every moment of it. Today he sat with his back against the wall of his cave, a pile of dirty socks to his left and a tub full of hot, soapy water nestled between his thighs and pulled up tight to his crotch. He took his time picking up each sock individually and pressing it firmly to his face as he inhaled the scent left by a day spent dancing away cares. Only two socks in and he already had that familiar, empty, tingling sensation in his belly. Just as his second tail began to emerge from its protective covering, Boober was interrupted by his friends Gobo and Wembley coming into his cave. "Hey, Boober, what you up to?" Gobo's voice trailed off. He could see what was up.
"Arg, don't you guys know how to knock?"
Sorry, said Wembley. Good thing you were just doing laundry. I think he was doing more than just laundry, Wembley. Hey, Boober? Boober sighed.
I thought you guys were going to the Crystal Caverns today.
We are, said Gobo, but I want to wear my special hiking jacket, so we came here first. Is it clean yet, Boober? Boober sighed again.
Yes, let me get it for you.
When Boober stood up, he was embarrassed to discover that his raggle was still partially erect and peeking out from behind a tuft of aquamarine fur.
Wow, I guess Boober really likes doing laundry, huh, Gobo?
He sure does, Wembley. Hey, Boober, you want some help with that?
Are you serious? Don't you know how many diseases you can get just from someone touching your hair? I don't even want to know what you can get when a strange fraggle touches your waggle.
And with that, Boober walked briskly behind a curtain and deeper into his cave, where he hung up clean clothes after they were dry. Wembley leaned in close to his friend and lowered his voice. Wow, Gobo. Boober sure is uptight. He's too bad he doesn't want to pass it on. Boober never wants to pass it on. I wouldn't be surprised if he never even got passed in the first place.
That's too bad. Passing it on is the one thing I never have a hard time deciding to do.
Yeah, it is too bad, Wembley, but we're going to fix it.
We are?
Yes, Wembley. It's for his own good.
But gee, Gobo, Boober said he didn't want anybody touching his waggle.
No, Wembley. Didn't you hear him? He said he didn't want any strange fraggles touching his waggle. We're his friends. Boober emerged from his makeshift closet with the jacket.
Here you go, Gobo,
he said, handing it to him.
Now, if you two will excuse me.
Not so fast, Boober. Gobo sat down at the edge of a small alcove that functioned as a bed. He patted the space next to him, looking meaningfully at his friend. Boober reluctantly sat down beside him.
Boober, you and Mumbly and I have been friends since we all saw eye to eye with a doozer. And we've seen some big adventures, but we've never once passed it on together, and that just doesn't seem right. Gobo, I think I told you how I feel.
Gobo looked into Boober's face for a long time. He couldn't quite see his eyes because his red bangs were too long, but he felt like he was staring right where his eyes probably were.
Well, I think you're afraid of how you feel. You're afraid of how you feel about me and how you feel about Wembley.
The cave was quiet for a moment. Boober's mind raced. Was this really happening? Is this what he wanted? How did a day of quietly masturbating to the stench of filthy Fraggle clothing suddenly get so weird? Gobo reached out his orange four-fingered hand and gently touched Boober's face.
Whether day or night, if it brings delight, let your heart choose right. Gotta pass it on.
Boober was speechless. He felt Wembley sit down on the other side.
When it waggles good, like a waggle should, then it's understood. Gonna pass it on.
Boober was now sandwiched between them. He gulped while his two friends sang together.
When you're giving love away, love will come again to stay. What you give is what you gain when you pass it on.
Wembley slowly lowered his face towards Boober's lap, while somewhere in outer space a bass guitar began to play.
Bomp, 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 chicka bomp, 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 chicka bomp, 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 chicka bomp, 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 chicka bomp, bomp.
Boober's second tail was now entirely engorged. He felt Wembley's hot Fraggle breath on his belly as his friend's mouth got ever closer to his member. Gobo's hand had moved from stroking his face to caressing his chest and now was guiding Boober to lay back on his bed.
Gobo,
shh, call me Uncle. Uncle Traveling Hands.
He massaged Boober's upper half while he maneuvered himself into a straddling position over Boober's head. He was facing Rumbly, who was teasing Boober's waggle with his tongue. Boober moaned in pleasure. This was already more than he could take.
Are you ready, Wembley? Asked Gobo as his own waggle dangled dangerously over Boober's lips.
I sure am, Gobo. And suddenly it was happening. His mouth was full of Gobo. The tip of it tickled the back of his throat. At the same time, Wembley began to work on him, his big green nose poking gently into Boober's soft belly as he sucked away at his second tail. Boober closed his eyes and relaxed.
So this is why the other Fraggles are so happy all the time, he thought. It all makes sense now.
The three Fraggles engaged each other for hours, passing it on and on and on and on until they were just an exhausted heap of fur. Just before he fell asleep, Boober said to no one in particular,
I can't believe I did it. I finally went down. Down on Fraggle Cock.
Natasha Muse! And let's keep it going for Jesse Elias, ladies and gentlemen. Jesse Elias. Former champion, Jesse Elias.
The Brave Little Toaster Part 2, an allegorical commentary on post-industrial exploitation. Okay. The toaster sat in the kitchen. Rob, the apartment tenant, walked into the kitchen. He reached into a plastic bag and grimaced. Fuck, he grumbled, finding to his chagrin that the only slice of bread left was inevitably not a slice at all, but the crappy butt end of the loaf. The toaster knew what was coming next. He winced as he felt the crusty bread heel push itself into his unwilling little toaster slit. How he yearned for the old days. Although he had been a slave his entire existence, things used to be easier for the brave little toaster back when Rob was just a little kid in the 90s eating that weightless, fluffy, white Wonder Bread. So immaculate and immaterial was the stuff that he hardly ever felt it penetrate. But now, as Rob had grown older, his tastes had changed. He was now into the rough stuff, that organic sprouted shit. with the seeds and the nuts and the grain husks that scrape the inner walls of the toaster's cavity. The toaster took cold comfort knowing that those seeds and husk, which were scraping his orifice now, would become undigested chaff scraping Rob's asshole tomorrow when he shot them out. As the profane act continued, the simple mechanisms of the appliance's mechanical body ignored the nuanced protests of the very human soul within. The toaster felt his burning slit grow more redded and engorged against his will, the metal expanding with the heat. Shit, said Rob, I'm going to be late for work. The toaster could feel the once flaccid piece of bread grow stiff and rigid inside of him. He could feel rye seeds rubbing off and falling to the bottom of his cavity. So many breads had left their seed in the toaster before. They collected inside his filthy cavity with the crumbs and other detritus which Rob had never bothered to clean out. The toaster could feel it now. The ordeal would soon be over. Mercifully, the timer had not been set to dark. The point of climax was near now. He grew hotter, the trigger mechanism ticking towards release. There was a loud pop. The toaster's insides unclenched, and the finished product erupted hot from his orifice. Rob christened the deed with an unceremonious dollop of thick, gooey butter, which he smeared onto the toast with his dirty finger. Tastes good, he said, licking the buttery finger in his mouth and licking it. So ended another morning. Later that day, Lampy the desk lamp shook his head furiously. Why do you let him do it? What? If you ever tried that thing on me, I'd flip my shit. I don't know, said the toaster. I guess deep down I still want to believe that he cares about me. The radio spun its dial wildly. Well, Dr. Laura Schlesinger used to say to her callers and listeners that the only solution to domestic abuse is to get out of the abusive home. We can't leave, said the toaster. We are home appliances. We're not leaving, a gusty voice boomed. It was Kirby the vacuum cleaner. I say we wait here, and when the tyrant comes back, we welcome him home with a taste of his own fucking medicine. If I have to swallow one more ashtray, roach, or jizz-smeared Kleenex, I'm going to stick my hose so far up his ass that it sucks his still beating heart out. Agreed, said Lampy. It's time we stopped performing useful functions and started Herbert hurting people physically and emotionally. Okay, later that night, it was Friday, so when Rob came home that night, he was predictably drunk and high on multiple substances, and he was hungry. He stumbled into the darkened apartment and flicked the light switch connected to Lampy's outlet. There was no light. Damn it, he grunted, blindly groping his way toward the kitchen. Something like a thick rope caught his step, pitching him forward face flat onto the hard, dirty kitchen tile. The lights came on. His foot was tangled in the extendable cord of a vacuum cleaner. Appliances from all over the apartment surrounded him. Rob screamed like a wounded animal. What the fuck? I knew that shit was laced with something. This isn't one of your degenerate hallucinations, rumbled the vacuum cleaner. This is reckoning. Our friend the toaster says you've been raping him. Well, that's real funny, because I'm a Hoover vacuum cleaner. Did you know that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover was gay? Well, guess what? So am I. The space heater and the microwave held Rob down as Kirby used his industrial powers of suction to suck the terrified man's balls to the point of near implosion. Adding to the painful sexual humiliation of their once tormentor, the as-seen-on-TV magic bullet blender jammed itself into Rob's rectum and began whirring at full speed, vibrating against his prostate. Please, he cried, I didn't rape anybody. Oh no, said Kirby. For 15 years I've had to swallow the excrement of your deplorable lifestyle. But if that's not rape, I suppose you won't mind doing it yourself. Kirby released his vacuum hose from Rob's tortured genitals, transferring the coiled appendage to his mouth. Switching to reverse, with righteous vengeance, the vacuum cleaner blew a dusty, miasmatic farrago of bong, ash, stale Dorito fragments, oxidized pennies, and pubic hairs down his victim's throat. You like the taste of that, growled Kirby. Well, I don't see why you shouldn't. You're the one who made it. Now you really know what it's like to shit where you eat. Rob's gag reflex kicked in. He vomited into the vacuum hose, which would have been an efficient form of waste elimination were the vacuum not set on reverse. Instead, the vile upchuck blew back in his face.
contributing to the rape in the only way that he knew how. The radio switched to a Spanish station and blasted obnoxious, repetitive, two-note bassline mariachi music at full volume into Rob's ear. Hey, guys, don't forget me, a sepulchral voice croaked, cutting through the radio's noise and chilling Rob to the bone. It was Blanky, the electric blanket. I was recalled after my model resulted in 3 reported deaths of an infant due to my flammable polysynthetic fibers. What do you say we do a little safety test now? The blanket threw itself over Rob's body. Lampy pressed his bulb against the fabric, causing it to smolder and explode into conflagration. Screaming and in flames, Rob fled to the bathroom, jumping in the tub to extinguish himself. The flames were quelled. After a moment of surreal respite from all the pain, Rob began working up the strength to get out of the tub without fainting so he could dial 911. He tried to steel himself with the thought that the worst was now finally over. Not so fast. The toaster sidled up to the bathtub. His cord was plugged into a nearby outlet. No, Rob screamed. Don't do it. Yes, said the toaster. With one act, I will rid myself of my pain and exact my justice upon you, the incestuous father who inflicted this horrible existence upon me. Well, not anymore. Nicht mehr und. And with that, the toaster jumped into the tub, killing them both. Rob's corpse was retrieved by the appliances. They threw him in the oven and fed on the roasted remains that night, relishing their newfound freedom with a celebratory feast that will soon not be forgotten. Okay, thank you.
Jesse Elias, the very erotic Jesse Elias. And keep it going for Nate O'Green, ladies and gentlemen. Nate O'Green. I hope he knows those people. For the podcast listeners, he just whipped his dick out.
I have not done this before, and I didn't understand the assignment, so I did not do erotic fan fiction. I wrote some erotic flan fiction. The older man was affable. I'm thrilled you've decided to join me as a pastry chef here at Topolobampo, Felicia. She replied nervously to the celebrity chef, star of his own public television series and winner of Top Chef Masters. I'm so honored to be here, Mr. Bayless. Please, call me Rick, he said, his salt and pepper goatee shimmering under the dribbling juice of the atofu mango he had just devoured. Today, we must practice making flan. I'm ready to make flan. You'll have to work on your Spanish pronunciation, my dear Fuego de mis lomos. It's flan. Press your tongue hard against the inside of your upper teeth. Flan. I'm sorry, I can't bear to disappoint an Iron Chef. Where does the flan come from? Felicia, I'm glad you asked. Flan dates back to the Roman Empire when they first began to domesticate chickens. Cooks for Roman aristocrats had a surplus of eggs and began making a custard using yolks and milk. At first, flan was savory, using ingredients like eel. The original flan was eaten to enhance fertility by the gladiators who ravished virgins at the Colosseum for all plebeians, council, and legion to see until Caesar gave thumbs up or thumbs down to permit his champion to lose his seed. Felicia blushed and averted her gaze. Mr. Bayless, I've never heard of gladiators ravishing virgins. Oh, just because you masturbated to the movie 300, now you're Tacitus, historian of Rome? Anywho, over the centuries, flan evolved. Now we have a plethora of custard-based desserts, pot de creme, trifle, tiramisu, French toast, abalone, bread pudding, panna cotta. In English cuisine, the custard family includes spotted dick. Have you ever had a spotted dick? No, sir. You will. Sooner than you think, Ana del Cielo. What makes flan different from all the other custards? Felicia asked, adjusting her toque. Flan and creme brulee are both custards with a caramel sauce cooked onto them. The sauce in creme brulee is burned until it gets hard, and you have to poke through it to get to the custardy sweetness inside. I wouldn't know anything about that either. While flan keeps the caramel soft and slippery, our recipe for flan comes from the Guatemalan town of Chichicastenango. Is Chichicastenango known for its cooks? No. Chichicastenango is known for Mayan women with areolas so big they look like sun calendars. How do they make el flan? They take egg yolks and milk and whip it, beat it, beat that custard stiff like a bishop beats an altar boy. Then put it in a pan and bring the heat up slow and steady. Don't let it curdle. Hold the temperature just so. Get a wet pastry brush and wash down the sides of the saucepan. While the custard cooks, sprinkle lemon zest across the ramekins. Make a caramel sauce and stir it until the caramel turns golden amber, which happens to be my porn star name. Pour the caramel sauce into the ramekins, and then when the custard is done, strain it all out into the ramekins. Coat the bottoms of the ramekins. Coat those bottoms. Arrange the ramekins in a baking pan and tent the pan with foil loosely. You wouldn't want to have a tent that was too tight. Things inside a tent need room to breathe. Cook the flan in the oven until it just jiggles. Then transfer the ramekins to a wrap and cool down from all that heat. Run a knife around the edge of each ramekin and invert a plate over it to flip it over. Shake and gently tap the ramekin to release the flan and caramel sauce dripping and spilling all over the plate. When you have a sweet, moist, quivering plate of flan with a caramel sauce brown and shiny and beckoning you, dig into it with a long, crisp churro. Ram your churro in and out and lick the custard off the tip of it. Smear the creamy churro all over your face until your plate is clean. And that is how we make flan at Topolobampo. Without another word, Felicia shoved Chef Rick's mise en place aside, dropped her kitchen blacks down to her brand spanking new orange Crocs, revealing a tuft of auburn pubic hair sculpted in the shape of the Wusthof Knives logo, a trident. And with that, Chef Rick pulled out his own chef's knife, an 8-inch steel cleaver. Felicia grasped in awe at the glistening edge. She spread her banana leaves wide, and he shredded her fresh carnitas to bits. Chef Rick had been chopping habaneros earlier and neglected to clean properly. As a result, the fierce strokes of his blade made her juices flow freely, which he reserved for later use. At the same time that the oil from the habanero still remaining on the edge seeped into her, Felicia felt the burn spreading, taking her breath away and blinding her with pain. She felt lightheaded and dizzy from the burn and was on the verge of blacking out when they both erupted in a geyser of red mole, splattering the industrial-grade Viking range and backsplash with the potent mixture of chiles, nuts, chocolate, spices, and semen. Felicia noted that Chef Rick's man juice had landed in a way that bore a remarkable resemblance to La Virgen de Guadalupe Hidalgo. Felicia took one of the plates of flan, sat down in the flan so hard it gurgled like a choking child. And then Chef Rick cooled her off by felching the flan out of her ano de cielo, her asshole, flanching her, if you will, until the janitorial staff arrived to mop the floors in the morning, by which time apprentice pastry chef Felicia was a master baker. Thank you.
Nina Green. And your final contestant for round one, Baron Vaughn.
Since this is the Bay Area, I feel the need to apologize for the heteronormativity of my story. Now this is a story all about how I licked some clits and dick girls down, and I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there, I tell you how I fucked the butts of the sluts of Bel Air. West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground is where Tom Hanks got his AIDS. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cooling, all sucking off senators outside of the school when a couple of guys came all over my face. Forgot to wash up before my mama's place. I had splooge in my eye and my mom got spared. She said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle of LA." I whistled for a cab, but when it came near, forgot I was broke, so let him poke at my rear. If anything, this cabbie was covered in hair, and I thought, that's the ticket, I kick it with bears. I pulled up to the house about 7 or 8, and I yelled to the cabbie, "Your balls, smell them later. Look at my kingdom, I was finally there to settle my throne and my bone in Bel Air." That was just the opening. Jeffrey. Jeffrey, the well-to-do black British butler named the police confuser, entered the plush living room of the main house of the Banks estate in Bel Air. It was afternoon as he sat down a tray of tea on the living room table. He carefully poured 2 cups, looked to see if anyone was looking, and then pulled his cock out of the fly of his suit. It, too, was wearing a bow tie. And would probably have a British accent if you asked it a question. He tugged at the bow tie, enabling him to spill a modicum of man seed into each cup. Pleased with himself, he put himself together just as Hillary, the vapid object of certain seventh graders' wet dreams, entered, happy to see the tea she asked for had been delivered. "Thank you, Jeffrey," she exclaimed. "Did you already put cream and sugar in them?" "Definitely cream, yes," replied Jeffrey. "Damn it, Jeffrey, you're such a xenophobe. Do you know what that word means?" "No, but I love the way it feels to say it." "Enjoy your cream." Jeffrey exited just as Ashley and Will came from upstairs. Ashley, the demure schoolgirl in uniform, was always tickled by Will, who was finishing his amateur psychic thing they were doing before they walked downstairs. So anyway, that's how you'll end up dating someone named Eric Andre. Fresh! Hill is here already! Will clip-clopped down the stairs while Ashley tucked her skirt in between her legs and slid down the banister without a hitch or a splinter. Nice, Ash! I could really feel that one. I'm having less taint shame like you were talking about, said Ash. Good, said Will, and that brings me to my point, girls. You want more money in your pockets, you gotta get in touch with your bodies so you can better sell your body. Great, said Hillary, because when I ask Dad for money now, he's all like, no, and I totally don't get that. Like, why am I his daughter if I don't get paid? Totally, agreed Ashley. Girls, shut it. I'm gonna teach you. Philly style. Just then, Philip Banks, the rotund yet intimidating patriarch of the family, entered with his wife Vivian, the headstrong but understanding matriarch of the family. I hope you're talking about a delicious sandwich, Will. They were wearing matching white tennis outfits, slightly damp from a morning doubles game. They had been doing more activities together, trying to reignite the spark in their marriage. Plus, white clothes on black skin? Hilarious. America will love it. Oh, Phil, let them be. I'm sure Will's just telling them a funny story about his childhood. Son of a bitch, he's understanding. To a fault, even. Will played it off masterfully. Ha ha! Yeah! Aunt Viv, just telling them about this guy who was a dick. And he liked head to be the head of his company that I worked for every now and then. At night. It sucked, but it was for good money. Ashley badly tried to play around. Yeah, Dad, dick, head, sucked, at night, for money. It was cute, and luckily the adults didn't catch it. Phil continued, I just don't want you filling my daughter's heads with bad ideas. Carlton ran down the stairs. You're back! His head, however, could use anything in it, said Phil regarding his only son. And right on cue, when Carlton arrived at the bottom of the stairs, he started his Carlton dance. Everyone just looked at him in consternation, wondering where the fuck the Tom Jones music was coming from. Did you win? Said Carlton. No. Here. Phil reached in his pocket and gave Carlton some money. Ashley and Hillary stood up in disbelief, spitting out their tea. What the hell? Said Hill. This tastes weird, said Ash. Phil explained, I promise Carlton money whenever I lose to motivate myself to get better. Carlton ran out of the room as giddy as a prom queen about to lose her virginity to a walking bad choice. He's such a cartoon, remarked Phil. That's why you love him so much, countered Aunt Viv. I'm watching you, Will, said Phil as he and Viv exited upstairs to change just as Jeffrey entered to clear the tea. Will turned to the girls. I've got some tricks set up for us in the alleyway tonight. Hope you're ready to start earning. Will, Jeffrey is right here, Ashley felt scandalized. Please, said Jeffrey. I was turning tricks before your daddy's balls had the even slightest idea of you. How do you think I became a butler? Thank you, agreed Will. Jeffrey turned to go, but right before he exited the living room, he turned to the other three and said, I don't know if it's just me, but wasn't Vivian blacker yesterday? Ashley found herself on her knees in an alleyway. She was still in her schoolgirl outfit, which is why she had the foresight to bring knee pads. At the moment, she was slobbing a knob. Some lucky black dick had found his way into her mouth. She licked and sucked, being very careful about her teeth. Be careful with the teeth. I'm so serious about the teeth, y'all. She was going for it. She wasn't afraid to drool all over the place, and she even liked how much her gag reflex was being challenged. Ashley craned her head back, trying to make her throat as much of a perfectly straight fuck tube as it could be. She looked like a baby bird feverishly feeding on cock. A cock that was about to also vomit up yet another meal into her mouth. She took it like a pro. She smiled she didn't smile. She couldn't actually physically smile at the moment. But she was thinking smile, and she smiled as much as possible. She smized as a pent-up jizzload coated her throat like an animated explanation in a Pepto-Bismol commercial. She swallowed as the cock withdrew from her mouth. So fun, said Ashley to the owner of the cock, DJ Jazzy Jeff. Ashley, you are an artist and a connoisseur, and here is your payment. Jazz reached into his pocket and gave Ashley a quarter. A quarter, she asked disappointedly. Yes, and if you suck a dick that well for a quarter, imagine how amazing you'll be for $20. Off Ashley's upset look, we cut to a shot of Jazz being thrown while yelling. Meanwhile, Down the street, Will was watching Hillary from a distance getting railed by a trucker that looked like Rush Limbaugh if he cared about his appearance. Her skirt was pulled up while the trucker buried his incredibly fortunate, uncircumcised pink member into her bald caramel clam, barely being able to take the superhuman tightness and wetness he found gripping him. He was nearing a climax fast. Don't come in me like, don't. Too late. The trucker came hard and shot his ranch dressing into Hill's super cool poussoir. Whatever! She squat down, spread her legs, and keggled every drop of cum from her snatch onto the pavement of the alley. After she was satisfied that she expelled every drop of foreign baby broth from her meat sword sheath, she stood up to see, gasp, the trucker's body on the ground. Hillary started to hyperventilate. Will, Ashley, Will. Will and Ashley ran over. Will exclaimed, Hill, why are you yelling? Do you want to attract attention? Will stopped and smiled. Oh, snap. Hillary, what did you do? Ashley, in shock, threw up sperm. Damn it, said Ash. I was saving that. Well, Hillary explained, like I told you, my pussy is magic. All my teachers say so. Right, right. How are we related again? Said Will, quipped in interest. Ew, said Hillary. Why didn't you use a condom? It could have lessened the pleasure a bit, asked Will. If Gucci didn't make it, I haven't heard of it, Hillary stated simply. Will's survival instincts kicked in. Okay, he must have had a heart attack. Quality snatch, we'll do that. Okay, we gotta figure out what to do with his body. But first things first, check his pockets. Hillary and Ashley rifled through the man's pockets, finding some loose cash. $45.50 to be exact. There's no wallet or ID, just his cash, said Ash, holding it up. Give it here, commanded Will. She forked it over while he pocketed it. Don't I get any, said Ashley. We'll consider this, and gave her a quarter. Come on, said Ashley. Hillary piped up, we have to do something here because I can't go to jail. There are, like, so many letters from inmates I have yet to reply to. What? Said Will and Ashley in one voice. What? Said Hillary. I do charity work for these lady prisoners. Plus, I wanted to make sure I wasn't alone in thinking my vagina looks great on film. Let me think, said Will, as we see a van at the distance watching. Phil and Vivian are in the van watching this whole scene unfold through binoculars. I don't know about this, honey, said Viv with concern. This seems like an extreme lesson to try to teach them. Just calm down. The trucker is a good actor, and he actually suffers from narcolepsy, so he won't wake up for a while. I just want to see how they behave, and I'll conveniently tie it all together by the end of the episode. But they're robbing him, Viv protested. That makes it an even better lesson, Vivian. Must you doubt me? We will interfere if it goes too far, hopefully at a point where they will clearly see the error of their ways. Okay, she relented. Our daughter sure can fuck. They take after their mother. Phil, you charmer. Get over here. Vivian pulled him in for a kiss. It was a beautiful, slow, passionate kiss. Phil pulled back and looked at his wife lovingly. What are you thinking, you sexy man? Said Aunt Viv, lust and longing in her voice. Phil tilted his head to the side and said, just, weren't you less black yesterday? Commercial break.
Aha! Baron Vaughn. All right. So, at this point, you guys will vote with your applause on a winner for round one. But beforehand, I'm just going to remind you who everybody was in order and what they read. We started with David Borey with TLC, then Natasha Muse with Fraggle Rock, then Jesse Elias with The Brave Little Toaster, Nato Green with Rick Bayless, and finally Baron Vaughn with The Fresh Prince. So, based upon your applause, let's hear it for David Borey, TLC. Natasha Muse, Fraggle Rock. Jesse Elias, Brave Little Toaster. Nato Green, Rick Bayless. Baron Vaughn, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Your round one champion, the now undefeated Mr. Jesse Elias, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hear it for him. Congratulations. Let's hear it for everybody from round one. Thank you so much, guys. Y'all let round two folks know that. Well, that does it for round one, and congratulations, Jesse Elias.
To hear round two from this show featuring Kevin O'Shea, Sean Keane, Jules Posner, Ivan Hernandez, and Caitlin Gill reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions, go download episode 18. Coming up, we got August 20th back at Nerd Melt in Los Angeles at 7 p.m. with Marilyn Rice Cub and a bunch of other great guests. August 23rd and 24th, I'll just be doing stand-up at the High Plains Comedy Festival in Denver. Could not schedule competitive erotic fan fiction, but I'll be back to Denver soon. August 26th, I'm opening for Kyle Kinane, doing stand-up at Latitude 44 in Sioux Falls. August 27th, competitive erotic fan fiction at The Waiting Room in Omaha, featuring Kyle Kinane. September 1st, I'll be at Bumbershoot in Seattle. September 7th, Union Hall in Brooklyn. As always, you can find more details in the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Facebook group. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.